Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Mr. Kyle Dvorak and Mr. Denny Carter. It's our week 447 preview of the 2023. Now the season's actually over. It finally ended. It ended. They said it couldn't be done, but it did end.
It did end. It seems like it won't end, and then it does.
I know. It's always all at once. Oh, the crushing finality of it. Anyone else? You guys seem very happy. I'm actually kind of happy. I mean, I'm a baseball fan, though, too.
So no, like, I'm happy right now. It's just the happiness won't last nearly as long as it needs to. Like, the week after the Super Bowl, feeling great. Have some free time. I can, like, work at articles on my own pace. The news schedule is slow. That's awesome. Two, three weeks, and we get the combine. Yeah. And then, like, but, man, there's a point way too early in the summer in which I'm like, holy hell, please give us anything to work with. And that's, like, June 1st, and there are – 3 more months until football.
Yeah, but we do get to ease off of the NFL with UFL. Am I right?
Did you see AJ McCarron has so much UFL St. Louis Battlehawks pride, he asked for his release from the Bengals. This is actually not a joke.
I know. I wrote the blurb.
So, wow. Good job.
Yeah.
I read it.
He's going to he's going to go play. Guys, I'm in a UFL redraft league. Did I tell you this?
Are you actually – this one sounds like a bit. Hold on.
Can't even get you to do like a normal fantasy football league. You're in a UFL redraft league?
Yeah, but a normal league is not sick enough. I need the sickness, and a UFL redraft is sick enough. Trust me. And the fellas who invited me, because they saw me posting about UFL, and I'm currently competing with my boy Kyle for a ticket into the UFL season opener tournament on DraftKings. So – we'll see how that goes. Anyway, the guys who invited me, they said, let's have the draft soon. And I said, wait a second, guys. Wait, pump the brakes. I said, we're not even going to know the rosters until like 14 minutes before game time. Let's wait on that.
You should wait on that. But I'm the only one. I'm a football fanatic. Obviously, I literally cover the NFL for my job. I think the offseason length is just fine. I never get like, I would give anything for a Jags Titans game, now I'm like, once September gets here, then it'll be cool.
Well, because you watch baseball. I mean,
watch other sports. I watch the Olympics on NBC.
That's right. That's right. I watch a lot of sports on NBC and only on NBC. When golf happens to be on NBC, I watch it.
You know? Which is every week, and you every hour of every day watching golf. That's right. Kyle, you got to become a baseball fan, man. The summer.
Oh, that sounds like hell, brother.
It's games every day, and. What you're really complaining about by June 1st that you've been going over all the same stats for 4 months. Guess what baseball has every day is 1 trillion new stats.
I know, man. But
I like that. That does a lot of it. I think everything about baseball actually does sound appealing. Like the stats of it sound appealing. The daily nature of it. There are sometimes daytime games, which is really cool. But like, the baseball of it is what I don't have interest in. And that's kind of a problem for getting
into
baseball.
I don't like it. Now I need binoculars to apparently read the names on the jersey. I have 20/20 vision, by the way. And the new jerseys, you've got to zoom in. Like, it says Molina. And it's in size 6 font. They maybe need to fix.
So that's the issue? Is that the font is too small?
Well, we don't get too much into it.
Boring, brother.
Well, they look – listen – I'm not besmirching these companies. The players and the reporters are doing that. Everyone's saying they look like Walmart knockoffs because they do.
See, you know what? I always didn't like baseball jerseys, so I saw these and I literally couldn't tell the difference. They looked boring now.
They look like the most wrinkly garments ever produced to be worn by humans is like the biggest problem.
I
want to
look into this more. That sounds pretty
cool. They look like they will wrinkle. Like if you like breathe on them wrong, they get wrinkled. And the players are not happy. They're literally talking to the company. They're talking to the union. They're very not happy about it. Wow. You want to know baseball players?
Just because they don't like the way they look? Like they're not? It's not a performance-based complaint?
Well, they are apparently. They're not as tailored for some reason. So, like, a lot of people are saying the pants are too tight. This is not a joke.
too tight.
What? They made baseball sexy and they hated it?
No. And some of them said they can't get tight enough. This is not a joke because they're not tailored enough.
I see.
So they made baseball unsexy and weird. Selling me on baseball now. We're getting mad that it's not sexy enough. I'm a golf fan.
No one wants the CC Sabathia pant look. Is that right?
No one wants that. And
the guy looked like he's wearing pajamas.
By the way, we're going to hit on some of the news. The Saints hiring a new offensive coordinator. The latest on T. Higgins and the franchise tag. The big dog, Adam Schefter, getting it out there. Justin Fields, maybe go to the Steelers. I have a seasons in review article we're going to talk about. Kyle, we're going to check in on his ongoing rookie check-in series. But Kyle, you said you had a story real quick you needed to share about the Super Bowl that you needed to get off your chest. What is it?
It's pretty boring, and I feel like our riffing was better. But, we were talking about, like, you guys are in Vegas, so you were especially in the heart of the gambling of the Super Bowl. And I did some of my own, best playoff best ball, DFS, like the parlay apps. And I was at a bar. They did one of the pencil in the score, closest at the end of the game wins. And I got smoked in the Super Bowl. I had unders everywhere.
Got wrecked at the bar. By all the locals.
Well, no. In my personal DFS stuff, playoff best ball, I had unders everywhere. I had, and obviously went to overtime. They ran a bunch of plays in overtime. I had a bunch of nobody Chiefs, not named Mecole Hardman. So, like, I had a good time. But at the end of the day, I, like, opened my phone at the last play of the Super Bowl. I'm like, wow, that is way less money than I put in. And then I'm, like, kind of annoyed. I'm like, this sucks. And immediately the bartender comes up. He's like, you won $50 from the – I got the closest score. I had 21-24. And he's and I literally told him, I was like, I don't want to give it to someone else. I was like, buddy, I am so sorry, but this was way fewer zeros than I thought I would walk away with from this. And he literally goes, like, pretty much everyone else left, and I wanted to, like, take a picture for Instagram. So can you please accept it?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Always for the content. Always for the content.
Yeah, you got to accept $50 for the content. That's
my prediction for the game, by the way, was 24-20. Denny, what was your prediction?
I actually forget what I said. I'll stand by it. I stand by it because this is what the analytics told me before the game. The analytics came to me in a dream, and they told me that the Niners would win 38-10.
And well, Denny, if that was your prediction, I have a $50 gift card to a brewery in Charlotte you may need at some point.
I'll be there in 6 hours, Kyle. and then you know what happened? A furious Chiefs fan printed that out.
Oh yeah,
and put it on a bulletin board and took a picture of it and posted it on the internet for other Chiefs fans to get mad about. And I heard about it. I heard about it very directly.
Without exaggerating, they will never forget that. They will bring it up anytime you tweet about the Chiefs from now on.
I really wish that. The 49ers hadn't had the worst game of their entire franchise history.
So you do wish that, as we talked about on Galaxy Brains, even the literal referee is like, ooh, wouldn't have done that on the overtime.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like they didn't do anything right. Like they turned into the worst rushing team in the NFL. The worst rushing team.
Because the Chiefs made an adjustment one time. It's like Shanahan didn't like conceive of the possibility that they might adjust their defense.
You know, we always have, after analyzing every aspect of a game like we do with the Super Bowl, you always have regrets. My biggest regret is believing that Shanahan would be able to adjust to anything that happened in that game, right? And when we talked to Robert Mays, that was sort of what we were going back and forth about at the Super Bowl. And then I came away from that conversation. I was like, wait a second. If Spagnuolo changes one thing, it's over.
Totally over. And he did.
Well, Shanny did make an adjustment. 3 days after the game, he fired the defensive coordinator that held Patrick Mahomes 19 points in regulation. So that was certainly a change.
He did make quite the adjustment there. So I guess we'll be talking about the Super Bowl. This has been an amazing recriminations game. Every Super Bowl produces recriminations, but this is like in the top like 3 or 4 percentile of Super Bowl recriminations games.
Oh, yeah. The recrimination level is very high.
I feel like when it's coaching driven, it's really easy to look back and overanalyze it for fun. Like, I think we all kind of understand that it's a one game sample and like fumble luck played a lot into it. But some games like, oh, two players played great. I think the Eagles game, like two players played great. You know, Jalen Hurts and Mahomes. Yeah. One guy comes out on top. This one was a battle of the minds. And what's a battle of the minds, Twitter nerds get to join the conversation.
Not enough people are pointing out, by the way, that the Chiefs punter Tommy Townsend deliberately hit that ball off that that 49 totally joke. It was obviously the freak flute play that shifted the game.
I would only believe that if Townsend was from Australia, which to my knowledge he is not.
He
but
sounds
really punters. They can do that. And if he is, I believe you. But I don't
sounds very Australian, Tommy Townsend, but it sounds very time to move on. Kyle Dvorchik is Kyle's looking up where Tommy Townsend, the punter. It's February 15th. Yeah, I might as well look up where the Chiefs punter's from.
Boone, Florida.
Hey, that's functionally the Australian outback, I'm sure. Anyways, the New Orleans Saints have hired Clint Kubiak as offensive coordinator. So they had to get away from the Pete Carmichael, who was immediately scooped up by the Denver Broncos. Couldn't let him be out there on the open market very long. People were knocking down the door with ones of offers for him. Pete Carmichael has been duly reemployed. But were the Saints the team? I feel like, am I hallucinating? Were the Saints the team like this hire the first Shanny disciple you can find?
Yeah.
And not only did they hire the first Shanny disciple they could find, they've hired the first Kubiak disciple they could find, which is an amazing variation of the Shanny system. The Kubiaks and the Shannys are very tied up with each other, of course. Gary Kubiak was Mike Shanahan's a top lieutenant for many, many years. It just seems like a good, even though it's a, there's some nepotism here, you know, Clint Kubiak, I wonder how this guy got his job. Whatever. He knows the system quite well. We wanted them to hire the first Shanny they could find, Denny. What do you think Clint Kubiak's arrival in New Orleans is going to do for this offense?
Right. So I did see some Saints beat writers this morning kind of speculating what the offense would look like. And the consensus seemed to be that it would be a mix of the Shanahan type system plus whatever they had last year, which I don't really like. I don't really like that because they should throw out whatever they had last year completely.
Even Taysom's package, didn't he?
Yeah, the Taysom package has got to go. I mean, come on. Really, I think that is over. I think Carmichael was the only one keeping that alive.
Taysom, too, we overlooked the fact every number two or three quarterback is constitutionally obligated to get injured the second they come into a game.
Right.
And we never viewed Taysom as like a number two or three quarterback. That's what he is. And the second he comes into a game, he gets injured. And that was really the downfall of the Taysom package.
So I do think it's good for Olave. We can get more, possibly more easy kind of targets, catch and run sort of targets for Olave, which we did not have last year. So it was
everything was 17.1 degree of difficulty.
Yeah, like next gen stats would tell you that he had a 0.4 percent chance to catch every single pass that Derek Carr threw him. But, you know, so we can get more high probability throws to Olave, making him more consistent, more reliable, bankable for fantasy purposes. That would be nice. I don't think Kamara could get more involved than he already was, you know. So I guess
he needs to get less involved. It doesn't
right, right, and that either stays the same or actually decreases his usage as a pass catcher. But the question is that a Derek Carr stat? You know, is that a thing that he can't really help? It's just the way he plays. These are questions that I would like to try to answer this off season. I'm actually writing a piece for the site on how quarterbacks have handled two high safeties since that is all defenses do anymore. And
poorly. We handled it poorly.
And we need to know. My main takeaway is that good for Olave, you know, kind of a break even situation probably for Kamara.
What do you think, Kyle? The Shanny and Kubiak systems long overdue arrival in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. We saw Clint as an offensive coordinator once for the Vikings. Did some stuff well. They threw deep at an above average rate. They were top 10 in situation neutral pace. But like we've seen with a lot of the Shanahan tree, they were below average in terms of raw play action usage. They were below average in terms of pass rate over expected. Does some stuff well, but like doesn't strike me as the sort of Mike McDaniel or the Houston coordinator, PFF Bobby.
PFF Bobby.
It doesn't strike me as that type of rising star level hire. I vibe a little more with the nepotism aspect of this one. It could still work out. I don't think it can be worse than it was last year because, like you said, they just did not seem to have any desire to make things easy for anyone other than Taysom Hill at any point. So I just don't know if this is the turnaround that the Saints fans are hoping for. I don't even know if Derek Carr has that turnaround in him at this point in his career, to be fair. Like, Clint could turn out to be a really good offensive coordinator, but does it get them to the heights they need Derek Carr to be to make their investment in him worth it? I'm going to guess no.
That's a really good point that Denny also made is, again, and something I've been ranting about all year, like the cult of the system. We probably like overrate the importance of systems. And yeah, what if it just turns out it's the Derek Carr system all along, and this is what Derek does, and it doesn't really matter what plays you call because there's just certain kind of throws he's absolutely addicted to making. Yep. And so yeah, it's not a game changer. I will say though, it's better than like hiring like the leftover Sean Payton tight ends coach and promoting him. They had to sever ties with that system, and just had.
Well, that was Dan Campbell, wasn't it? Sean Payton tight end coach.
That would have been amazing.
I get the point being that, I mean, they literally just kept the guys who were there after Payton in place, and they got like most of the bad parts of Sean Payton's offense without the creativity of that he had for years.
Denny seemed like he had a eureka moment there, Denny.
Well, yeah, I would hope that Kubiak would bring some play action into this offense because Derek Carr only used play action on 15% of his dropbacks last year, which was not high. Let's say that. I mean, that's right around like Jalen Hurts and Bryce Young near the bottom of the league. So let's get that rate up. I mean, just use it, man. Just use play action. Like you look at like Goff, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jordan Love. These guys are using play action at a high rate, and they're good.
But the Saints, my final thought on the Saints, how good is this skill core really? Chris Olave is very good. Michael Thomas is finally going to be done in New Orleans. Alvin Kamara, near the end of the line. Rashid Shaheed, very, very good, but also very, very role player-y. And it's not like the worst skill core in the league, but I wonder if this is like not even really that great of a skill core.
I'm totally down for that. Like Juwan Johnson's a fine but limited tight end. Rashid Shaheed is a very limited player who does one thing really well. He is a good field stretcher. Olave, like you said, I don't know exactly how much of Olave's usage in that it's very difficult air yards is based on his play. I more so think it's the offense and Carr, but he's a number one who's he's not a bona fide star number one. So they have a good number one, role player number two. They haven't had anything at number three for God knows how long. Alvin Kamara seems as a runner to be on his last legs. Like a lot of guys who seem like number twos at their own position. Like Kamara would be a good change of pace back at this point in his career. Shaheed should probably be a three. Juwan's probably fringe starting level. And for a guy like Derek Carr, who's not the best elevator of talent, he's fine, but he's not going to raise up the players around him. It's not enough. I think it's almost certainly not enough.
This next one's not even really a question. I don't know where we were going with this, but yeah, The Athletic's Paul Dehner reporting that all expectations are for the Bengals to use the franchise tag on T. Higgins. It's kind of confirmation of something we've been assuming. That is very sad. Denny was telling T. Higgins to get ready to learn Titans in some of our off-the-air conversations, but also maybe it's kind of like a last dance moment for this version of the Bengals offense because – any chance they tag and trade him, how confident are you that he's on the Bengals in 2024, basically? Because it'd be the opposite of the Chiefs' approach, investing heavy, heavy resources in wide receiver.
The thing, I don't think anyone wants T. Higgins to go, and including, you know, I mean, I'm kind of drawing off of a limited sample. We only spent a few minutes with him at the Super Bowl, but when the subject of free agency came up, he didn't seem all that interested in like talking the talk of a guy who's going to aggressively explore other options. And he seemed content, I guess, to just be like, yeah, he said, I don't control any of it. And which is a strange thing for a player to say, but you know, so I guess he's just assuming he's going to get franchise tagged and that comes with a nice payday. And then he'll leave after that. Ja'Marr Chase didn't seem too incredibly worried.
We were trying to entrap Ja'Marr Chase into like begging for the ball. And
but he said he has to share. But he said he's going to have to continue to have to share the ball. He wants to share the ball with his buddy T. So
again, what is with this younger generation? Kind-hearted wide receivers. A 2018 star receiver tells T. Higgins go kick rocks, and Ja'Marr Chase is like, I love you, buddy. Get as many targets as you want. We were talking about it last show. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp's the one. He's the best man. Calvin Johnson tells these guys they're losers. Come on. Also, I'm pretty sure Calvin Johnson was an extremely nice guy too.
Yeah, no. You know who would be in this vein, Kyle, is Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice would say, "Get Terrell Owens off my team."
I don't think Justin Jefferson's like being like, "Yeah, we gotta get Jordan Addison the ball." I haven't really heard that from coming from Justin Jefferson. And there's
He was the last diva, and then after that, it was all downhill.
Last of his kind. But yeah, boy, Denny, you are absolutely right. It was like, wow, they really want T to stay.
Yeah, so T. I think you can lock in. You can lock in T Higgins playing for the Bengals this year. Beyond that, you know, probably not. I would guess. I will say that I just don't see a path to him like seeing a good number of a ton of targets.
I think T should want off the team. I feel like his development is stalled opposite Ja'Marr Chase, and he needs to go somewhere where he can fulfill his destiny.
He should. I mean, I think he can be. We touched on this a little bit last week. I think T Higgins could be a wide receiver one on 10, 12 teams. You know.
Yeah, so sometimes people are like, T. Higgins could be number one in like 2017. Maybe 10 or 11.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Yeah, I think last year we got, what was their GM, or they have a de facto GM, Duke Tobin, right, said that they're not trading Higgins. And then last year would have been a better time to trade for him because he was still on the rookie deal, and then you could franchise tag him. You could like assume what the Bengals have done and keep him for 2 years. So I don't think if they didn't get an offer that worked for them last year, which I'm sure they got offers, I don't think a similar offer will get the job done this year. I don't think they'll get a similar offer because you have less control over his contract. So this might be the last ride on the Bengals, but I'd be stunned if 2023 had already been the last ride and that he gets traded.
I think that's a perfect bow to put on it. The big dog, like I said, ESPN's Adam Schefter has reported that Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin is a, quote, big fan of Justin Fields. I saw the Steelers have now become the betting favorites to acquire Justin Fields, I believe via DraftKings, so maybe not everywhere, but via the DraftKings odds. It seemed cool in theory until you remember a man by the name of Arthur Smith was in Pittsburgh. But I don't know, Denny, could Arthur Smith be good for Justin Fields, even if he's bad for skill players in fantasy?
Right. So, I mean, you know, my initial reaction to Justin Fields in the Arthur Smith system is that I think Arthur Smith, for all his failings, would be likely to deploy him the way that in fantasy circles, we want to see him deployed, which is a guy who has 8 to 10 design rushing attempts a game. And, you know, in Chicago, some weeks we got that, and some weeks they treated him like Vinny Testaverde and said, you got to drop back and you got to sling it, baby. You know, like you got to do it. You cannot run. And, you know, so I do think that we would get the running in the Arthur Smith system, and that would be a great thing.
Be a very, very great thing, Kyle. But it is also Arthur Smith is where fantasy goes to die. And could that still include our guy Justin Fields, who to date in his career has been a far better fantasy player than real life player?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the biggest problem, especially like, you know, we're looking at really early drafts, but I expect ADP to sort of flow from there. And, you know, I don't know if I have faith that Justin Fields can play out his current season, I would say whether it's in Chicago, it's not going to be in Chicago, wherever he ends up as the starter, because we just haven't seen him progress into a starting level passer yet. And I would say maybe that happens under Arthur Smith. Maybe it does. I mean, I'd say Arthur Smith coaxed out better play from Desmond Ridder than Desmond Ridder is capable of. He just sunk the entire offense to do it. He's like, I can scheme up 10 good throws for Desmond Ridder, and I refuse to let him throw the 11th. And that, like, makes Desmond Ridder's stats look better, but it ultimately guarantees you don't score more than 20 points. I think that's maybe what like a sort of good outcome would be. And for a Steelers franchise that seems just resigned to be mediocre at quarterback, sort of makes sense. A good defense with a team that has centered their distribution around 18 points, like they're scamming their way into another playoff berth, man. But from a fantasy perspective, it's going to be low volume. And like, I don't even know if we'd see that much rushing design rush attempts from Justin Fields. Desmond Ridder was a really good athlete and didn't get a lot of design rush attempts.
He's fine. He's a fine athlete. By the standards of modern NFL quarterback, he's not that great of an athlete. He's not a bad athlete.
I'm pretty sure he tested really well at the combine.
He tested really well being 24.
But even dating back to Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill, if you watch the broadcast back in the day, you'll never forget. Former wide receiver at Texas A&M, right? Ryan Tannehill, never let you forget that. Also had next to no design rush attempts under Arthur Smith. So if it's not a lot of dropbacks, which are scrambles for our fantasy purposes, but maybe not a lot of design attempts and it's a slow pace, it's rushing, like, I don't know, man. What are we doing here? I'm back to the point. You know, when they inked Arthur Smith and I went, what the hell are you doing here? I tried to talk myself into Justin Fields as exciting, and I've wound up back at the point of what the hell are we doing here?
I think there'd be a 0.0% possibility they don't lead the league in rushing with Justin Fields, Najee Harris, and Jalen Warren, where I would make them like the strongest betting favorite in the history of football to lead the league in rushing next year.
You know, the more I think about, I get that. And you're right. Overall team rushing yards. Yeah. Yes. That's definitely
team rush attempts too. Oh, baby. I don't know about Najee Harris's yards per carry, but his carries per game is going to be solid.
The CPG.
It would be terrible for Jalen Waddle. Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. We don't want running backs attached to rushing quarterbacks. We've learned this lesson the hard way. And so folks who are drafting like best ball teams this winter and spring, and they're greedily getting the Steelers running backs thinking that they're going to get a trillion carries and including red zone stuff, you're not going to get that. You're not getting that with Justin Fields under center.
Denny, surely no one's already drafting best ball teams, right?
And not only are they drafting them, they're fretting about their exposure.
Certainly. Yeah, we've seen a few exposure. We've seen people talking about their shares, and it is literally February 15th.
Their shares, their portfolios, their exposures, their risk management. It's all really fun stuff for February 15th.
Can we talk about UFL?
The names are tiny on the jerseys. Yeah,
I was going to say, you want something that'll drive me to baseball and your tiny little names? It's, X percent of random wide receiver five in February.
Speaking of baseball, we have a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back after this. The countdown to spring training is on, so for those looking to get a head start on the upcoming MLB season, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use promo code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout. Wow, I cannot say the word success. Just really cannot. Every promo, I'm like, English language.
You have traditionally struggled with that one.
I really have. I've got to take phonics. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think that you need to get in front of a mirror and say success.
Success. You're like, a success, Pat. You're damn right you're a success.
And people success. Like you.
They do. They love me. I've never was told it's Pat growing up. So I didn't look like him, thankfully. Or sound like him, but I did have his name. Kyle has no idea what we're talking about.
Nope.
Kyle does know what we're talking about when we talk about Zach Robinson, right? The new Falcons offensive coordinator. Talking about basically, well, obviously we're going to use Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson. It was kind of like the tenor of his opening press conference. Like, we got good players. Not entirely sure why we didn't use them before, but I am going to use them.
And I mean, that was the Raheem Morris thing, too, is the like his first minute on the podium. He was like, you know what? Bijan's really good. Drake London's really good. And he didn't mention Kyle Pitts, and all of us started sweating profusely. And it hasn't stopped until today, so it's been a problem. Zach Robinson addressed that problem by mentioning Kyle Pitts. I mean, this feels obvious. You know what? I'll give credit to Arthur Smith. You want to look at like the shares of the pie.
Did you just say you give credit to Arthur Smith?
You got to hand it to him.
Like, hey, hold on. Under no circumstances.
Kyle Pitts, extreme target shares and air yard shares for a tight end. Drake London, extreme target shares and air yard shares. For me, it was one, the backfield actually did suck. The split in the backfield was not fun and not an optimal split by any means. For me, it was the combination of like, oh, well, I know which pass catchers I want my team to throw to, but I'm never going to throw the ball, period. And then I'm going to run the ball a lot, and I don't know which ones are the best ones to run. It's not like he didn't know who his best players were outright. He didn't know how to utilize his best players. He knew he had good pass catchers, and he didn't know he had one good running back. He was completely backwards in that. So I don't think the target shares, the air yard shares, are going to change much for the pass catchers. It's that,
and it's over.
It's that 70% of the air yards for Kyle Pitts isn't going to be 17 air yards.
Right.
And I do think there will be more creative usage, because a lot of it was like, I don't know, Drake London, jump ball, go figure it out. I don't know, Kyle Pitts, like, you think Desmond Ridder can hit you 30 yards downfield? Only one way to find out. And again,
Kyle, there's a 5% chance the DB will fall down on this route, and we will then maybe throw to you.
That really was. I mean, the plan for Kyle Pitts was to line him up in the slot. He ran from the slot about 60% of the time last year, and the plan was go deep down the seam, and once in a while we'll throw you a ball, and you can try to catch it between three defenders. And, you know, it's a fantasy wise, that's a nightmare. So I do think that all these stats will eventually mean something. Pat has been right. He's been correct. He's been correct in banishing all Kyle Pitts stats to the shadow realm and saying, these don't mean anything, which you have been correct. I found a new one that you can scoff at. Wow. Pat.
All right.
Only George Kittle had more yards per reception on slot routes last year. What do you think of that?
Yeah, and George Kittle and Kyle Pitts were 39 and 40 in tight end slot routes last year.
No. You're wrong.
Pat, they cracked the top 28.
I don't know where Pitts was, but he was up there. So I think I'm finally in on Pitts because –
No, you don't get to be on Pitts now. No.
He did never go away. He did never go away. He never went away in his defense.
What do you mean? I was completely out last 2 years on Pitts.
What? I thought you ran.
No, out completely. I
remember this, and we're not letting you in now.
I've never once been in, for the record.
No. In his rookie year, when we went to Canton,
Pitts crazy. That's right.
And I thought
he went for 1,000 yards, nearly set the record for receiving yards by a tight end.
And he was tight end 44 in fantasy scoring. I don't know. When I remember being like, I don't know about Kyle Pitts, and you guys told me not to come to dinner with you that night.
I can finally share. This was something a friend texted me, and I always wanted to like adopt this opinion as my own. But when the Falcons selected Kyle Pitts, he's a Miami Hurricanes fan, so he's a Gators hater. But he's like, this is the kind of pick that will get an entire front office fired in 3 years. I wanted to adopt that public persona on the Kyle Pitts thing, and I wasn't. And it is funny. That being said, I don't remain a non-believer. It does tight end, even in the best of times, even when you're not with Arthur Smith, tight end career trajectory is always non-linear, Kyle. And so it's like a hard position to learn as it is. It's very difficult when you're supposed to be catch first and they don't throw you the ball like they did in Atlanta. So I was never high on using a top eight pick on the classic. He doesn't even have a position. Like, yikes. He should try to pick if he's a tight end or a wide receiver. That never goes well. But I am cautiously in because his freak, Kyle, like his like freak of nature attributes have been established at the NFL level, especially as a rookie. Coming back from injury last year, that was really underplayed, like it was with Tony Pollard. Because wasn't Kyle Pitts one of those guys like, I wasn't really healthy all year.
He didn't reveal that he, I believe he tore his PCL as well, which is the one we didn't know about. I believe it was like torn MCL and PCL. I'm not going to remember the details correctly. But he, like in an Instagram post, just offhandedly mentioned the fact that he had surgery to repair a second ligament in his knee, which we did not have any reporting on previously. I'm like, well, that makes sense that you were more injured than we thought. You know what? I watched you play, and that kind of checks out.
So, I mean, this the Falcons change. By the way, Zach Robinson, the new offensive coordinator at Atlanta, we're calling him PFF Zach because here's the thing. He worked for Pro Football Focus.
That is correct.
There's another one.
Okay.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
We got a PFF. We got another PFF employee. We are breaking down the gates and taking over the game.
When do we get PFF Ian? Ian, who's no longer there, but when do we get PFF Ian?
I say, you know, he gets a job.
PFF Ian would be like the Dan Campbell of PFF alums, because like Dan Campbell does a lot of analytics things well, but you understand that he's not approaching it from an expected value point. He just intuitively understands being
he just wants to win.
Smart. He just wants to win. Ian would be that brand representative for us for PFF specifically, because Ian would vibe in an NFL locker room perfectly.
That's right.
He would. I'm not going to say unlike the other PFF guys, but like more so than anyone I've ever met in my personal day-to-day definitely. Life.
So, right down to being huge, by the way. Sorry, Denny. Final thought.
So Zach Robinson has high praise for Matthew Stafford, said if God had created a quarterback, it would be Matthew Stafford. So, if that's the case, I think if we're reading the tea leaves there, I think our guy PFF Zach wants maybe a pocket passer distributor. So I'm going to connect the dots here. Okay. So Atlanta last year had 530 pass attempts. That was the seventh fewest in the league. If Zach Robinson gets them up into like the top 10, as far as pass attempts go, you're talking about 100 more pass attempts over the course of a season. You know, that just makes all the difference when you're talking about Pitts or Drake London or Bijan Robinson, honestly.
Even top 16 would be amazing. And who, as we're talking this, I have genuinely no clue who the Falcons' starting quarterback is going to be next year. Like, genuinely none. Are there any schools of thought on this?
Well, he did say, Zach Robinson said, we're not looking for a specific kind of quarterback. It can be a mobile quarterback where it could be a pocket passer. I do think they're going to lean pocket passer. I guess Kirk Cousins comes up in discussions, but they would have to, sell the entire franchise to get him. So I don't know about that, but I want for Pitts and for London, I want a pure pocket passer. Give me that in Atlanta.
I mean, I think they could reasonably go out and get Kirk Cousins. I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to leave Minnesota, but at some point, like what, they're 6 years into the Kirk thing and they have one playoff win to show for it.
Lots of untapped upside there.
Yeah, I know. Like at some point, and they've seemingly positioned themselves like three off seasons in a row for this to be that at some point they have to give up. They haven't done it yet, but this could be the one. And at that point, like, yeah, he's going to be expensive and he wants his guaranteed money. But I do think a 36-year-old quarterback with like maybe two career playoff wins, maybe got one in Washington, who clearly
he did not.
Did he not? He
don't believe so. They got boat raced in the playoffs once or twice. I don't believe they ever won one though.
Yeah. So 36 with one, if you're right, one playoff win, coming off torn Achilles, right? Like, they'll be able to get him if they want to. And like you guys said, we know they have extremely talented pass catchers. Even Bijan Robinson is an extremely talented pass catcher for a running back. We just need someone to get them the ball at this point. And if they meet the threshold of Kirk Cousins, I will be thrilled to draft their guys ahead of ADP.
I will be thrilled to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. Thursday night is another chance to watch a new chapter in college basketball history when Caitlin Clark chases down the all-time NCAA scoring record as Iowa hosts Michigan. Tip-off of the Big Ten matchup is at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on Peacock. Got to watch history tonight. Caitlin Clark, Pete Maravich 2.0. It's going to be amazing. Coverage starts at 7:30 Eastern, actually. This is what the graphic said. There was a disconnect between the graphic and the promo. I do apologize. But, you know, if you're in, people are, hopefully they know that.
Oh, they know.
They know.
Buckeyes tried to stop her. I think we had like a fan or a cameraman run into her after a game. So we tried to do, who was that? We tried to do Michigan a favor. No.
No, don't do that. So Caitlin Clark, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Thursday evening on Peacock. I guess the Michigan Wolverines, they stand no chance. Let's just be real. I don't know. Iowa's ranked fourth.
I think it'll be a good game worth watching.
It doesn't even need to be a good game. We're tuning in for history.
We love history. We do love history.
We do love history. Dan, I made history with my Seasons in Review article because there were takes. It's out there, though. I published an article. It's called my 2023 Seasons in Review. Basically, a little paragraph breakdown on all 32 teams' 2023 seasons. Kind of just breaking down what happened and a little bit where they might be going forward. It's kind of an exercise for me just to get to write, to be honest, which I do love to do.
But you should still read it, to be clear. Pat's good at writing. No,
thank you. I worked very hard on it. I was very happy with how it turned out, Denny.
Yeah.
And we thought you might bring up one or two, maybe just one, you guys, entry that you found interesting from the season's review article.
Yeah. So, by the way, I did see this described by someone online as the best piece of NFL writing he has seen recently. So congrats to Pat for...
How recently? Put a number on it, Coward.
Like
17 days.
In the past 12 hours.
I mean, if they read a lot in 12 hours, it's still a compliment.
I did want to mention the 49ers blurb that that Pat has, because it was really, really well done and really spoke to something. I think everyone feels this, but I think Pat did a good job of like encapsulating it and saying the 49ers have long since won every one over every last computer. They've damn near won every game too. They just can't bag the big one. And yeah, the computers, they love the Niners
so much.
That's why I'm now in financial disrepair.
And he literally lost his shirt.
I looked at the computer and I said, "Oh, that team can't lose." I really did. That's not a joke. I said this team cannot lose to a mid team like the Chiefs. And they did. So yeah, the computer stuff works. Jimmy Garoppolo was elite in this offense. So by the way, and I think you guys are on the same wavelength, this idea that Brock Purdy is somehow, okay, let me ask you this. Okay.
Oh boy. Here we go, fellas.
How many teams could Brock Purdy start for outside of San Francisco?
Five or six, maybe.
No, more than that. Is he?
Would you rather have Brock Purdy or Derek Carr?
Brock Purdy.
Purdy. Really? I'd say five.
Derek Carr is like coasting to the MVP in Kyle Shanahan's system, I think. Like coasting.
Oh, you're saying Carr in San Francisco?
Jag, brother.
Well, I'm just saying in general, I think Derek Carr has more standalone talent probably still than Brock Purdy. So sue me. So sue me. I'm a hater, all right? What would a Brock Purdy do other than take the Super Bowl?
Okay, I've seen, you know, like snarky posts about like, oh yeah, anybody could walk off the street and operate this Niners offense. That's not what we're saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying anybody could do it. I'm saying a lot of guys could do it. Gardner Minshew could do it.
Denny, saying. You wound it up. You set the pins up. I'll knock them down. I just think it keeps coming back to the same point over and over and over again with Kyle Shanahan. It's like we talk about all the time, like how elaborate this plan is. It's shocking how often it almost works. You know, three times in the past 8 years where he basically held the Lombardi trophy in his hands. But like, so the instinct, though, is that it's the system propping up the quarterback still seems to be right after all this time. I think Shanny himself intellectually understands this, which is why he went out and did the extremely reckless Trey Lance trade up and drafted Trey Lance, and he got Cole Field literally immediately. He understands that he could still maybe get lucky with the system and the system produces a Super Bowl, but that even he needs someone who in those like really dire crunch time moments of the game can put the offense, or the offense is just the player instead of the Shanny system. And I still think it's not possible with Brock Purdy, even though he is a better freelancer than Jimmy Garoppolo is. I think it's still – he can get closer than anyone else in the league with pure scheme to winning a Super Bowl. That he understands at the end of the day, you still need someone who can go out there and, like, make a play on their own. And I just don't know if they have it.
Okay, so here's – I feel like here's the sort of the culmination of that question. Pat, go first. If you are John Lynch, are you making a change at quarterback, let's say after 2024? Let's say the season goes the same way. They lose a Super Bowl. Are you making a change after 2024? They literally lose a Super Bowl. Don't care.
Well, we know they won't because of, like, political realities. I don't mean that, like, the political, like, the truly political sense, but, like, how do you not pay a quarterback who's gone to back-to-back Super Bowls? But to me, it's the classic Daniel Jones. Like, absolutely not. Like, you can't pay this guy. The reason he's valuable is because he's on his rookie contract. Just try to find the next Brock Purdy. And so you've kind of shown the league how this guy can be successful. So even if he does move on, he could probably still be a top 15 or 16 quarterback. But like he's already at his ceiling, Brock Purdy. I mean, he just had his career year. This was Brock Purdy's career. And he's going to roll this tape next year when he has 53 touchdowns. He's had a career year, obviously.
Oh, man.
But I feel like that is true. And no, I absolutely would not pay him
I mean, heading into that Ravens game, he was on pace to like break all of the efficiency records. I think like pure yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt. Like you were looking at guys who were throwing three passes a game, 40 yards downfield in the 1940s that he was up there with. I think he like just missed it because of that Ravens game. But like you said, it was historic, like truly in the annals of history, one of the best seasons. It's hard for anyone to repeat that, let alone a guy like Brock Purdy, who's good, but like he's not the best quarterback in NFL history by any means.
How did you think his Super Bowl was, by the way? I thought it was very unimpressive.
It was like, bad.
Very, very unimpressive. He came out a little hot, but he never made – it seemed like he and the coach were both so focused on don't make the big mistake. He tried to a few times, actually. He still did a cross-body throw at one point. But I didn't think – at no point did he ever threaten to, like, make a play to, like, stem the tide of the Chiefs' defense. We were showing him, like, no respect, like, their zero-type blitz looks. He never once made them pay, and he wasn't the reason they lost the game, but he could have been the reason they won the game, and he never threatened to do that, though. So we'll see. We're going to be endlessly debating this guy till the end of friggin' time, man.
But well, like, we would debate any Shanahan quarterback because it's really impossible to tell where the quarterback begins and where the system ends.
Kyle, which one do you want to talk about? Which write-up?
So I had, at first I was just going through reading them like, oh, which of these like sparks some interest in my mind. And I didn't read your, it was literally one sentence intro telling in what order they are ranked. They're not ranked, obviously, but the Chargers are like 27th or 9th, I think.
27th.
And so I go, Pat, why did you rank the Chargers so low? They're a much better team than this. And I scroll up and it's, this is draft order. And you did not rank them that way. They were just that bad.
It was 28th, by the way. I was very confident it's 27th. It's 28th.
Okay. I thought it was 27th too. Not the team I want to talk about. Just a very funny experience remembering how dreadful the Chargers were. Obviously, they had a lot of injuries.
Yeah. By the way, your Chargers graph was really good. I recommend people read that.
Thank you very much. The Chargers. Wow. Yeah, I forgot that when they were 4-4, the three of those wins were over Aiden O'Connell, Tyson Bagent, and Zach Wilson, by the way. Like, they just three totally.
Oh, my goodness.
The one supposed good stretch of the year was just total scam victories. And Aiden O'Connell then got his revenge, 63-21.
Boy, did he. Not even the team I want to talk about, though, because we've already talked about them a lot with the Harbaugh and the Greg Roman and now Mark Trestman. So a conversation for another day.
Recently made a Mark Trestman joke, by the way, and he's back. Sorry,
guys. Randomly, like not just
totally randomly before. Yeah.
Well, that checks out. Honestly, it's like name random member of the NFL cocoon. He'll show up. He'll show up again sooner rather than later. And there's a decent chance it's on Harbaugh team now that we have two of them again. For me, the team that stuck out most. And I don't care if your team's good or bad, so not sad for me, but sad for their fans, was the Giants. And you were talking about how the Giants seemingly were better with everyone under center other than Daniel Jones, who's being paid a lot of money. So I'll read my little excerpt from it. Giants rarely fared as poorly as they did under Jones, even managing to spring post-Thanksgiving upsets over the playoff-bound Packers and Eagles. I totally forgot about those, by the way. Whatever that says about Jones' future as he rehabs from a torn ACL, the Giants learned the hard way to never run back a fluke playoff appearance. This feels like a dead franchise walking with Daniel Jones on your center.
It's bad.
Like, their defense is not particularly good. They just fired their defensive coordinator, so maybe they can turn it around, but they were 22nd in EPA per play allowed. They have a middle-of-the-road level of cap space. They have an extra second-round pick, plus they lost a lot of games, so they're at the sixth slot. It obviously breaks up a little bit the more you add in comp picks. But, like, good draft capital, some money, but they are roughly who they are, unless they really just land the nuts in the draft. They draft the next Justin Jefferson, who was, 21st overall. Like, obviously, he would be, depending on who's in the class, first overall. He's the most valuable non-quarterback. Unless they land that type of player, I don't see how they come remotely close to getting over the hump. And we've already had, like, power struggles within the organization. Obviously, it's what, like, I don't think Wink Martindale got fired for purely his coaching. It was reported. It was widely reported. There was a rift between him and that coach. So, like, they're resetting this in a year's time, aren't they?
I think the Daboll era ended the minute they signed Jones.
It did. 100%. 100%. The minute they re-signed him, it was over. So little flexibility. And, I mean, there's a chance. Truly, they can't cut him. Like, he's on the team no matter what this year. Is he the starter, though, for sure, you think?
I don't see how they invest in another quarterback who can unseat him.
The only Right. The only thing that could happen here is they draft a rookie quarterback at some point in the draft who comes out guns blazing in the summer, and they say, oh, well, we can't, you know, discount this kid over Jones. That's the only way. But really, I mean, when you pay a mediocre quarterback that much money, you're sealing your fate. I mean, the Lions are about to do that with Jared Goff.
They've already done it before. They're the one team that did work.
I mean, but I do think the Dan Campbell era is maybe not over, but it's in jeopardy when they have to pay Goff. And you have to pay Goff. The fans are chanting his name at hockey games in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, you know, you can't not do it. You have to do it. But it's not going to be good. It's not going to work.
What's the fluke playoff appearance that should not be run back this year, by the way? Is it the Bucks or is it the Steelers?
I mean, it's the Steelers. Like, they're not even – I don't say they're not even running it back. Like, they're just doing – who cares? Like, whatever. Like, they're probably going to change at quarterback, right? Like, especially from –
oh, yeah, it's totally over for Pickett, man. They're, like, barely even pretending it's not over.
By the way, the guys at the Ringer – did a podcast about each quarterback room, and they cited all the stats, like an incredible number of stats to show like how many guys were better than Kenny Pickett last year.
A lot.
And it was just like Ryan Tannehill played like 195 fewer snaps and had 400 more passing yards or something. I mean, just crazy stuff. Like, the stats on Kenny Pickett are unbelievably bleak. This guy, I mean, I think he'd be fortunate to be a backup at this point.
Yeah, he's no good. Yep.
Yeah, the Steelers feel like they're like throwing darts to change things, and the entire dartboard is the same. Like, you're going to swap out one quarterback who is like Justin Fields is probably better than what they had last year. He's definitely better, but yeah, is he better to a degree that changes the entire complexion of the team? He hasn't shown that to me yet. Like, did they change their offensive coordinator? Their last year's offensive coordinator before they fired him midseason was terrible, not creative, like didn't know how to use his players. What do you think they did? They changed a superfluous, meaningless change at midseason, and then more importantly at the end, the more permanent change. Like, they're making changes. They're not entirely running it back, but they're making these changes that aren't going to actually change the complexion of the team. The Bucks, on the other hand, are literally not going to make any changes. I think it's almost a foregone conclusion that Baker comes back. And when they do that, I think things smooth over with Mike Evans and he comes back too.
Can I mention one more thing from your article, Pat?
Yes, please do. All the glory to me.
Right. Would you mind if we keep ravishing you with praise here? Is that okay with you?
Please do. Yes.
You mentioned in the Dolphins blurb, you said already on the cutting edge as a first-time head coach the prior year, Mike McDaniel was even more so in season two, which is true. He said his assignment for 2024 will be bridging the gap between Broncos domination, speaking of their 70-point performance against Denver in week 3, and the Bills' humiliation, their losses to the Bills. His attack can't be quite so fragile. For instance, Devon Achane was the number 2 back. Your offense can't stall off the highway when the change of pace runner gets injured, even if the pace is the league's best. McDaniel has the brain power to figure it out. And I believe he does, but I think this is the same issue we talked about with the Shanahan offense, you know, like this offense needs to be, this Miami offense needs to be far, far more resilient. You know, it means to be able to put up yards and put up points when things are not working perfectly with Tyreek Hill and working perfectly with Devon Achane. Like, that, if that's the only way that you're going to score points and win games, then you're never going to be an actual Super Bowl contender.
Purdy or Tua Tagovailoa? You have to win a game tomorrow.
That is, oh my goodness, that's hard. What do you think?
Is my opponent good? Question. Is my opponent?
It's Purdy. It's Purdy because I've never seen Tua make one play.
I do think it's Purdy. Tua is Jimmy.
Tua is really Jimified. He just cannot make a play out of structure like save his life. And he's not mobile at all.
I mean, talk about a team that is going to make a mistake with Tua. They're going to have
fan base too. They love Tua. He is such a good young kid. They really love Tua.
This is nothing personal, but wow, they're going to make a huge error with Tua re-signing Tua.
So it won't be as big as the Daniel Jones error. Still, no error could ever be as big as re-signing Daniel Jones. Sorry, man. We're sorry to the Giants. There's a lot of Giants fans that listen to the show. We are quite literally laughing.
I mean, and they thought they had entered. They had exited hell. They thought they.
Some
of them. I think all of them did.
we'll see. So we've been talking for a long time. We have to hit on Kyle's rookie review series. Where and really good stuff. You've been going position by position. You want to talk about three players from it. The first of which is a wide receiver, Jackson Smith and Jigba, who could barely hide his disdain for his previous offensive coordinator, Kyle.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. That was incredible.
Tell us about JSN heading into 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think his rookie season would have been as bad as we perceive it to be if our expectations, mine included, weren't so out of line with what was like if you just ran projections. Like, I have to project every team for a realistic outcome. You were going to say, like, oh, why is his ADP so high? I do think the thing that was shocking was that it was not only that volume was a problem. He was particularly inefficient, and they didn't seem to know how to use him, how to scheme him the ball in a way that worked for him. I'll say the good news is a lot of stuff, probably not quarterback, probably they're going to let Geno Smith's some of his guarantees kick in. So he's at least under his current contract for now. They could still trade him, but a lot of stuff is going to change, notably the offensive coordinator who loved multi-tight end sets. They're probably cutting Will Dissly. No offense, a free agent. Tyler Lockett, I don't think they're going to cut him, but it's at least something we can consider. I think we're getting a lot of playing time and a more creative offense and probably a more pass-friendly offense in Seattle next year. But the second shoe that needs to drop is that he needs to be better. Like, he wasn't a strong target earner. A lot of the stuff he saw when he did earn targets was schemed. Wasn't doing a ton after the catch. Like, he needs to be more like the prospect we thought we were getting. So I'm kind of torn. And most importantly, in the early best ball stuff, his ADP is one pick different than what it was last summer. What did you see? Like, I was a JSN slappy to the nth degree last year. I love drafting. It was my favorite thing to do during the summer.
It was.
And I saw what he did and went like, oh, you got to take your L's. You got to take your lumps. We lost this one. And people are like, no, we didn't lose. In
you
fact,
don't understand.
We won. We at least drew to a tie. That's just not the reality of what happened.
But you know what? The underdog lobby is sharp. It's sharp, and it's sometimes sharp to their
fault.
Own detriment, to a fault, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to get much of a discount drafting him this year. I just think it comes down to, like, target distribution and, like, you know, enough footballs to go around. In the one game that DK Metcalf missed last year for the Seahawks, JSN had 16 fantasy points on 7 targets. He caught 4 for 68 and a touchdown. That 16 fantasy points was double his output in games where Metcalf played. Also, JSN played a lot on the outside, on the boundary in that game, and not in the slot where he played most of the season, and did quite well as a boundary receiver. I think as long as Lockett and Metcalf are there, he's not going to be a priority.
16 fantasy points. You might as well start 3D printing me that trophy right now. So, everything was with JSN last year. It was like, even the good games, it was like, wow, all right, cool.
Right.
He's a wide receiver 29.
No, I mean, 16 fantasy points, you raise the banner.
Exactly. We got closer to raising the banner with Dalton Kincaid, Kyle. What do you want to tell us about Dalton Kincaid heading into year two?
Yeah, he's a player who I sort of have similar feelings on where our expectations were last year and what happened. But I think the path to success this year is much more clear, because last year it was like, oh, he's a de facto extra wide receiver, 11.5 personnel. And as it turned out, every time Dawson Knox was on the field, they chose not to use him nearly as much to an absurd degree, especially with how middling to below average Knox is as a receiver, especially at the 50-yard line. Like, he has some red zone chops. He's not a terrible blocker. But when you invest this much in a tight end, Pat, you mentioned it with Kyle Pitts, and it's even way more true with Dalton Kincaid. You drafted a tight end as high as you did in the first round. They take a long time to develop. Well, at least he plays tight end. Oh, wait, what? No, he doesn't have a position? No, give him a position. Please, give him the position.
Yes, give him
and they position. Didn't give him the position. Like, even down the stretch when Dawson Knox came back and he had some productive games at the end of the year, his usage was still just meh. It was a 70% route rate, and he never took, or he took once over 60% of the snaps in his final 6 games, including the playoffs. Like, that's not tight end one fantasy usage. But I do think for him, the roadblock is so minimal. Dawson Knox is not a roadblock that scares me. Whereas, like, DK Metcalf is very good and deserves to earn targets. Tyler Lockett is very good, has good chemistry with his quarterback, and deserves to earn targets. When you start doling those out, it's harder to see where they come from for JSN. Gabe Davis is not good and a free agent. Khalil Shakir is a fine tertiary option. And after that, like, obviously Stephon Diggs I've locked in as number one already, but after that, there's a very clear to me number two opening for Dalton Kincaid to take over. And he played a position in which his usage as a rookie, had our expectations not been so absurd, it would have been great as a rookie. You know, it was spotty, but some tight ends don't play at all as rookies, even with this level of investment. So this would have been a good outcome had we set our expectations correctly, and it would make me optimistic for this next year. And I am. I just think we kind of jumped the gun last year. But I actually think there's a clear path to, like, Dawson Knox, you're just not it. You're a true backup. Dalton Kincaid, we need you to add more to the offense. We don't want you to add more. If you don't give us this extra dimension, we're not going to the Super Bowl. We're not beating the Chiefs. So I feel somewhat optimistic on his rookie season.
Just want to mention, I think Kincaid has great PPR scam appeal. 60 of his 73 receptions in 2023 were behind the line of scrimmage or within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. So that's a scammy. I love it. I love it. Just keep feeding him those easy targets. It's the opposite of what we talked about with Kyle Pitts, right? And so we like that. We want that. If that usage continues, I think he could be fun for PPR.
Kyle, you mentioned Steph Diggs, by the way. What if Steph Diggs isn't even in Buffalo?
Like, he, I know. I didn't want to bring that up, but because it feels far-fetched.
Yeah.
But, I've thought about it from, like, doing the dynasty rankings perspective. At least the rumors of Steph Diggs not being in Buffalo, even not the rumors, just the speculation, doesn't have to be like I'm hearing. It could just be, what if? That level of what if is going to create a fervor for Dalton Kincaid and dynasty as this year goes on.
Real quick, Kyle, you wanted to end with Jahmyr Gibbs. Amazing rookie year, but just wondering what the ceiling actually is. The long tradition of guys who should be three down backs, but they get typecast, this change of pace backs coming in the NFL, and then coaches just never pivot off it. What do you want to say about Jahmyr Gibbs?
Yeah, I titled the article. All of the articles are out now. Two pieces on the running backs, receivers, and one on the quarterbacks and tight ends rookie classes. Titled the article, Jahmyr Gibbs, Dynasty RB1, and my intent was RB1 overall. Looking back, I'm waffling on if I want him one or two because I'm updating the dynasty rankings probably here in a few weeks as we get some free agency stuff. If I want him one or two with Breece Hall, it would only be a one spot knock to switch them. But he's in the conversation. He's firmly in the conversation. Obviously, there are concerns that his split with David Montgomery will ever prevent him, or at least for the next 2 years, that's what David Montgomery's under contract for, will prevent him from reaching a true ceiling. But he was a really strong fantasy option last year, in which he really only got elevated to a role that was going to produce fantasy points into the second half of the season, and he crushed in that role. And you check some of the boxes that the first half of the season and even the preseason speculation concerned me. Namely, it was, does he see work at the goal line? And like in the first three games, did not at all. And Dave Montgomery saw a bunch of goal line work, and I was like, oh, this is like, we can write down an L, pencil that in. Use pencil and erased it because he started splitting goal line work, but he still was catching passes in the second half of the season, and he was really efficient as a runner. It was a lot of boom-bust running, but the booms were really good. They outweighed the bust by a long shot. So if the concern is he's extremely talented, but how much work does he get, especially from a dynasty perspective, I have no problem ranking him as the RB1 overall. Like, once we have secured a player who's very talented and in a great situation, that's one thing that kind of gives him an edge over Breece Hall. Rodgers hasn't been, like, really good in one. He didn't play last year. Wasn't great his final year in the Packers, so it's been 3 years, and he's not going to play much longer, obviously. So the Breece Hall situation is very, very tentative. He's very talented. So is Gibbs, but I can take one who's pretty likely to have a good, but also, quote, balanced offense for, like, the rest of my lifetime.
Man, scoring those 10 rushing touchdowns was high-key extremely good for Jahmyr Gibbs, and he doesn't seem like he's going to get stuck in Duke Johnson land.
Definitely not. It's like, can he ascend to true elite three-down role, or will he get capped at, like, to me, it's like, does he get capped at 250 or so carries at some point in his career, or can he push past 300? Those are both wins. It's just the size of the win to me.
Looks like we're heading for maybe like a Jamal Charles type.
That's exactly.
Yeah,
I was thinking that, and I thought, don't say Jamal. Don't say Jamal.
I know. I literally thought that too. I was like, you can throw that praise on Jamal. I mean, then, you know, go ahead and say it. I'm not going to say it, but then you can say it. Go ahead
and say it. Say it.
Jamal. He's Jamal.
He is. He's Jamal Charles 2.0. You heard it here first. You also, the haters said there's no possible way the first show of the offseason can be longer than an hour.
No, they did. They said no way. They actually bet on it in Vegas. People are losing their homes.
The haters are drinking tears right now. The show was longer than 59. 59 was a lot of really good stuff. You guys have been putting great stuff on the site. Is one reason Denny's got that article coming up next week. Check that out. Check out Kyle's entire rookie review series. And yes, please do check out my seasons in review. I spent way too much time on it. I love to write very, very long articles. I love to host long podcasts. So for Denny Carter, for Kyle Dvorchik, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening all season. Stick with us for the off season. We will be back next week.